This is an interview with Mr. Wally Hutchins. The interview takes place at his residence.
Say again. Uh-huh. Walter W. Hutchins, September 29th, 1931.
And date of birth?
It's Walter W. Hutchins, and I was born September 29th, 1931.
Okay. Thank you very much for being willing to talk with me today. I know when I called you, Mr. Hutchins, I asked you if I could talk with you about Lyman Johnson, who was your father-in-law, and I do want to get to that, but I'd like to start with a little bit about who you are. And you gave me your birth date, and I know you moved to, you were not born in Louisville, but tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born.
Okay, Betsy. I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Went to school there. Graduated from Penn State University with degrees in dual degree in industrial psychology and industrial engineering. Spent some time in the Air Force. And after that, then took a diploma course in advertising and marketing at the Charles Morris Price School in Philadelphia. Began work as a consultant in marketing and research, and spent time with private consultants, Merck Sharp & Dohme, and spent about 11 years with the insurance company of North America and one of their subsidiaries in charge of marketing. Then I went into real estate as a broker and appraiser, and did that for a number of years.
Were you living in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, living in Philadelphia all that time. And about that time, I'd been married then to Lyman Johnson's daughter since 1966. She contracted a rather, what's called now, a catastrophic illness, and we thought we'd come down to Louisville. Her father had retired, and her mother had died. So he was kind of here by himself, and we just thought we'd bring the family together. And unfortunately, she passed soon after I got here.
Let me stop you there.
Yeah.
What is her name, please?
Her name was Yvonne Johnson.
Okay. And she was
Florence Yvonne
child.
Johnson. She was one of two children. She was the daughter, and he also had a son, whom he named Lyman M. Johnson.
Right. I think I've met him actually at the UK did the 50th anniversary celebration last year.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I think he was there.
He was there. Yes.
How did you meet your wife?
I guess they would call it a social meeting, kind of thing. I met her at the height of the movement days. Now it's called the movement in quotes. We were both in the movement, and
she was in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, also. She was working in Philadelphia. She was a psychologist also, and she was working there.
And tell me a little bit about your involvement in the civil rights movement.
I suppose you'd say I was active, an activist, more active than some. I was with CORE. For those who don't remember, it's the Congress of Racial
Right.
Equality. And we were primarily working on fair housing and adequate housing and any kind of housing. That was our chief focus at that time, the early 60s.
And within Philadelphia as a...
In Philadelphia as our base, right. So I was in the movement then for roughly since the middle of the 60s. Towards the end of the 60s, she and I, well, we got married in 66, and I think in 60, about 68, we decided that we could do a little more, and we opened a community center. It's called Black House, and it was to inform and educate. It was in the heart of North Philadelphia, which is an inner city neighborhood.
Actually, my daughter lives in Philadelphia.
Does she?
She's down on 22nd Street, but I know a little
Yeah, this was the heart of North Philadelphia. It was primarily for kids. We would open every day after school from like 3 to 7, and then we'd be open on Saturday or during the day. And we had just as many things as we could find to do. We had reading and had people come in and speak, and we had games and crafts, and literally anything you could do was welcome because they had nothing to do but run it in the streets and stuff. And it was definitely cultural, and we had people contributing from all over the city in terms of garments and books and literature and their time. It was just a great thing. We did it for a couple of years, and then we were expecting our first child, and it just got to be a little bit too much, so we weren't able to find anyone to take it over, and we closed it down after about 2 years.
And at what point did you come to Louisville?
That was in 1990.
So yeah. Much later.
Much later, yeah. We had our son had gone to, of course, schools in Philadelphia, and he was, I think, in his second year at Morehouse by 1990. So it was convenient for us to kind of close down in Philadelphia and come here, and that's what we did.
Did your wife continue working after the birth of your son?
Oh yes, yeah, she worked. For quite a number of years, she began showing signs of affliction about in the mid-80s. And the diagnosis was never favorable, but she ran contrary to the diagnosis, and she managed to thrive for more years than she had been given credit for. Or expectancy.
So. How did she practice her being a psychologist?
She was a therapist.
Okay.
And focused on children, child therapy.
Okay. In a private practice or a
No,
clinic?
It was a clinic, but privately. First she had worked at the state hospital. That's right, which was a mental hospital, and I think she got out before the focus shifted away from the institutionalization of people. I don't know where it went, but I think the term then was they were dumped, literally. There was no place for them to go. Except for medical treatment, which was not the same as mental treatment. But she got out before that and then went with a private child service organization and practiced there.
Can you recall from discussions with her at what point she left? She grew up in Louisville, I take it.
Yeah, she grew up in Louisville, went to U of L, did her graduate work at Ohio State, and probably about 60 was looking for a job, and the Philadelphia offer was the one she chose. She had the offer in Boston. She interviewed in Boston and New York, and Philadelphia was the one she chose.
Did she ever think, best to your knowledge, about returning to Louisville?
To work? I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Do you know why?
No, I don't really know why, except that I think she thought she had more opportunity elsewhere that practice.
Yeah.
And even today, if I were to say, if you're looking to practice in that area, though it's much improved, there's probably greater opportunities elsewhere.
Do you have any recollection of your first meeting with her father, Lyman Johnson?
Well, yes, I do. We had been dating for a couple years, I guess, I would say. Yeah, had to be a couple. And her father and mother used to travel often, and they have a... Dr. Johnson was the eighth of nine children, and probably five of those, his brothers and sisters, settled in New York. So he would frequently travel to New York. And since Philadelphia was right on the way, he would often stop. And finally, I was deemed worthy of meeting the family, which was impressive. I was pleased to rise to that status, and of course, not knowing really anything about him, nothing at all, when I met him, just knowing that they were the parents of the lady that I was entertaining.
So you didn't know about his leadership
in Kentucky? Not at all. And she never... She said he was a school teacher. I knew that. And that he had been teaching for a long time, which that time would have been 30-some years.
Do you remember at what point you began to get an inkling that he was more than a school teacher?
I think the first... When I came down for the wedding, we were married here, and I could not be unaware of the deference that was paid to him, just in normal, everyday ongoings, and his presence and his leadership in the family, and of course, you know, wedding is a lot of details coming together, and when you're not at the site, someone has to do it, and he had everything just arranged. And
where were you married?
We were married at Plymouth Congregational Church.
And did you have a reception afterwards?
Reception was... Reception was in the lower level.
Okay.
Yeah, the auditorium.
And approximately how many people do you think were there?
It felt like the whole city was there. it was a big crowd. It was a big crowd.
Were you feeling a little intimidated?
No, I was. I think the wedding experience overrode any kind of intimidation. That was just, you know, fills you up.
Right.
You've experienced it, have you?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
You know.
Do you think he was aware on meeting you of your involvement in Philadelphia with CORE and with housing issues?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure, because although I didn't go through the, I didn't ask their permission, I'm sure she conveyed enough about me to convince them that it was appropriate and proper and made sense and whatever, all the other things you need to get married.
Right.
Yeah.
So he at what point did he actually step down from the school system?
Well, he stopped teaching about 66, about the time we were getting married. Now, I don't have the exact, but he was then assistant principal in two locations and then worked in another school for a period of time for another almost 6 years. And then after that he was a member of the school board, elected to that or appointed for possibly two terms. So his teaching career spanned 40 years and then additional years in as a school board member. And because he was so dynamic, it just seemed like he was just still part of everything up until really later years, and awards would still come, and I remember him receiving the governor's medallion in 1996, maybe 95. He had come out of the hospital and he was in a nursing home here. And the award was offered, and the question was whether or not he'd be able to go up to get it, and he said he wanted to go. And of course, he needed a wheelchair to travel around by then, and I can still remember the night we drove up and trying to find the entrance to the governor's mansion. Is now that I know where it is, it's easy,
right?
But to find it in a night, it wasn't rainy so much, but it was in Frankfurt. I still have trouble finding my way across the bridge sometimes.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, he went up and got it, and this was Governor Brereton Jones who gave it to him, and Governor Breathitt and another governor was present. Maybe, I want to say Combs.
Or Carroll.
Carroll.
I'm not
Carroll.
Sure. I think it was. Governor Combs would have been there, but I think he had died.
Oh, okay. Carroll. I think that was Carroll. Yeah,
okay.
Two former governors were there also. So it was quite a night.
Mm-hmm.
And then even after that, the Common Cause chose him as a recipient. And by that time, he had moved to Tennessee to live with a niece. She was a retired registered nurse, and she said, why don't you come on down? Columbia is where he was born. So Common Cause wanted to know if he would be able to come to Washington for that. And sure enough, he said, yeah, let's go. So they worked it out, got the plane, got the chair. And fortunately, my son was in Washington. He'd graduated from Morehouse several years before, but he had a business in Washington. So he was able to be there and help. And they've got a great picture of Dr. Johnson, my son, and his niece in front of the Washington Monument,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a real precious picture.
Who owns the picture today?
Well, Betsy, I started actually in 1993, a Johnson Historical Society.
Did you? Okay.
to assemble and document and preserve literally as much about Lyman Johnson as I could.
Wonderful.
And that picture is in the archives. It's not really, I don't call it archives, it's his papers.
Mm-hmm.
But I have them here, they're on their way to the U of L for a permanent depository. So they're in the Johnson papers.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful that you're doing that.
It's a joy. It's a privilege, really. Each year we have a birthday memorial on his birthday. We call it a birthday memorial and chit-chat, because chit-chat was a word he used to use often when he got people together for dinner and chit-chat, and they would just sit and talk about literally anything that came up or pressing issues. So we've done that now for 3 years and plan to do it as long as we can.
And where do you hold that?
The church at Plymouth Church has been available every time, and it's the second Saturday in June, which is the date closest to his birthday, so we've kind of institutionalized it to that point.
Tell me his exact birthday.
His exact birthday was the 12th of June, 1906.
When you had the birthday and chit-chat, tell me what goes on there. How many people come and what's the conversation like? Is there a formal program?
Bessie, every year it's different. The first year it was almost a memorial kind of thing. And I had a representative from UK, a representative from LCCC, because they have an award that's named after him. So Stan Watkins came and Chester Grundy came up from UK. And it was just almost a memorial. Then I also incorporate the audience as much as possible. So I then asked, we also played some of his tapes, okay? And that's part of the program. And then the audience could recollect anything they wanted to say, and I recorded their comments, and that kind of made the package for the first year. Then the second year, I'll have to look and see how we did it, because this last year is the one I remember most vividly. This year, I asked people to come prepared to say what they thought Lyman Johnson would say about the city-county merger, the Central High suit, and the police situation. And people had a lot to talk about. Yeah, and we recorded that, and everyone just, you know, had a good chit chat.
What do people think he would have said about the Central lawsuit?
I was always going to say I'll play you the tape, but it was interesting because we had the plaintiffs there, a representative of the plaintiffs. She just came because, you know, she wanted to and was welcome to, and we had representatives from the Alliance who had joined the suit, and then we had some other people, I'd say, who would say probably representing the other side. What'd they say? Everybody seemed to think that he would be in favor of wherever they were. He'd be in favor of the suit, and he'd be in favor of the school board, and be in favor of the school. And it was such a fluid thing that you can't really say. Everyone had a different opinion.
Well, it's a tough issue.
It's tough, yeah. And I think the judge worded his rendering such a way that I think it was a magnificent wording. I mean, he allowed for the entry, but he allowed that we wouldn't revert to the strict segregation, and there's a nice broad area in between. I think it was masterful. Personal opinion.
Let me go back. You said that you moved here in 1990.
90.
And your wife's health was poor.
Yes.
And tell me about your interactions with Mr. Johnson at that point.
At that point, we just kind of became, as children of parents, kind of caregivers. He was fairly robust.
It would have been 84.
Right. And of course he was living, by then he had moved to Blanton House, so he had his own apartment. Don't think he was still driving. No, he wasn't still driving. His eyes started to fail as he got older, and he had to stop driving. But he kept his parking space because I could use it every time I went down to Blanton House. But that was primarily it. He didn't need, continuous attention, and he seemed to be thankful that I was able to take care of Yvonne as much as I could. And that was the major, I mean, she just required, 24/7 attention. She could sit up and she could feed herself till the end, and coherent and all that, but it was a muscular dystrophy that enabled her.
Did you care for her at home?
Yes, she was never had to be institutionalized.
And she died in what year?
91.
Mm-hmm. So really shortly after you moved here.
Yeah, shortly. Mm-hmm.
Sort of hard. I'm going to ask you something, and I'm thinking, well, that would be hard to answer, but how did she feel about coming back to Louisville?
She was in favor of it because she knew that her father was here kind of by himself, and again, it was just an opportune time because our son was out of the house in school. We didn't need the size house we had, and we were actually looking to get on one floor anyway, and decided to come here and get on one floor. And so she was at ease with it and kind of welcomed it. Again, I think the being closer to her father was kind of comforting.
So you really weren't here a very long period before her death.
No.
But you elected to stay on.
Well, again, it was, I guess, fortuitous. My son was getting ready to graduate, and I wanted to really find out what he was going to do after he graduated, whether he was looking to come back home, to be with us, to be with me, or what. And it turned out he was perfectly content to stay in Atlanta. He had, even before he graduated, he had started a school there and a business, so he was well engaged and he was comfortable with it. So I had no pressing business back in Philadelphia. I had no immediate family there. And Louisville was a nice change of pace. And I liked it. It seemed to like me, so I decided to stay.
Their mother now, what was her name?
Her name was Juanita Morrell Johnson. She died about 78.
I've always wondered about her without knowing. Describe the differences between Louisville and Philadelphia at the time that you came here. Well, let me even take it back further than that. When you first started visiting here, were you aware, were there things going on in Louisville and things in Philadelphia? Were there differences? How were they similar?
Louisville was less intense, less hectic. Philadelphia is the third or fourth largest city in the country. Just busy, really busy, really busy, really big. Problems as with any major metropolitan area. And Louisville was just, I'll say, more relaxed, had problems, but the scale was considerably less and, frankly, easier to take. And I didn't know at the time, but I was ready for it. So.
I can see that.
You can?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just from my own visits to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't live in Louisville. I live in Lexington, but
okay.
I'm relatively new to Kentucky.
You're from?
I came here 2 years ago from Richmond, Virginia.
Oh.
So, but I'm in and out of Louisville a lot.
Yeah, so. Sure you are.
Now, Yvonne's brother lives in Pennsylvania.
He lives just outside of Philadelphia.
And is he younger or older than you?
He's younger.
Okay.
Yeah.
And their mother now, what was her name?
Her name was Juanita Morrell Johnson. She died about 78.
I've always wondered about her without knowing much at all because he was so active, and I don't know if she was at all or whether she, I just don't know anything about her.
About the wife, yeah. You had met Dr. Johnson yet?
No, never.
No.
I mean, I know from what I've read, I've watched some videos.
Oh, so you were probably not even here while
no,
he was
wasn't.
Alive.
No.
I see. Yeah.
What kind of a woman was she? What were her interests? In?
Mrs. Johnson, after they married, she was primarily a homemaker. Mm-hmm. She was a college graduate and had worked in registration at maybe Knoxville or Nashville. I don't know if I can find out. I think she was working there when they got acquainted. But primarily homemaker. I don't think she ever worked here. I'm sure she did some volunteer activities because that was her nature. And kept the home, raised the kids, and did all the great things that a guy like Lyman Johnson needed to have done to so that he could do what he had to do.
Do you have any knowledge of what kind of volunteer activities or if she belonged to any organizations or a church? Or?
I knew she was a member of Plymouth. As he was, I'd really have to do more research to find that out definitively. I'm sure it's obtainable out of his papers and so forth. I don't know.
Are any of his papers already at the University of Louisville? Or?
No, the only thing they have now, he was the recipient of, the figure keeps rising, I'm saying now about 250 certificates, citations, awards, plaques, whatever. They all have that out there now at U of L. But that is all. They have none of his papers. They're in about 20 plus boxes here. And he was so meticulous in his organization that, of course, he has an alpha index and a numeric index, and you can, everything's cross-referenced. You can go there and within minutes find whatever subject. It's just
impressive.
Impressive, yeah. Exactly. Overwhelming, almost, because I've been doing more research. Matter of fact, I'm in discussion with the Kentucky Humanities Council now to do something with Lyman Johnson.
What do you mean when you say to do something?
Well,
they have
the Chautauqua or the speakers. Okay, I auditioned for the Chautauqua, and I was not chosen. And one of the things that Virginia Smith said was the panel thought that being the kind of person he was, there was not the drama in his life that the Chautauqua characters like to have. Okay? And I could see it. I could see, little as I say, where they were coming from on that. I think we could have dramatized, well, the incidents that I mentioned all had drama involved with them, but anyway, that's, so, matter of fact, she's waiting for me to call her now to talk about being in Speaker's Bureau, okay? So, that's kind of where that is, but.
Can you describe for me which incidents you were proposing to play in the Chautauqua?
I was going to. Okay, it's okay to tell you this, right? Okay. I'm thinking about what the Humanities Council, their version, so, well, anyway.
I guess I'm not getting it so much, or I'm not asking so much about their interpretation. I'm just curious about what examples
what
of his life
do.
That you would.
Well, we were going to talk about the suit against UK,
right.
Okay? We're going to talk about the teachers' equalization. He fought a big battle, but it didn't take long to convince the powers to be that black teachers should be getting the same amount of money as white teachers for doing the same thing. Then there's his whole activities in the civil rights, the protests to open up the pools, the restaurants, the showcases, the theaters, and so forth, and the stores. That's another, I think, dramatic situation. So those were the ones I was going to focus on and pull the drama out, and still will. I expect I'll do a Speaker's Bureau for it.
Do you have any photographs in his collection?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I'm working on I'm calling it now an annotated photo biography. Many photos that have not been published. And I'd say it's about that thick now, and it's just a work in progress, yeah.
Are there photos from any of the social justice issues that he was involved in? Or are the photos mostly family photos? Or?
Well, they're family photos, plus they're photos of his getting the awards. There are news clippings from situations photographed and appeared in the New York Times when the busing was a big thing. It's a real, real famous one that Times came down to do a story because busing was such a hot issue here. Yeah.
So it's a collection of lots of different. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When are you hoping to move it to the University of Louisville?
Oh, the papers?
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of pledging that as soon as we reach a decision about what I'll do with Humanities Council. I still do have to go through some boxes because I'm still looking and adding photographs and that. But I really want it to be there by now, but it just things keep coming up. And he had asked me to make sure to go through it and take out any really personal family type things. And I feel that obligation, and that's kind of a slow process.
Mm-hmm. Well, 20 boxes is a lot of material.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. I'm asking about the collection because I think I said to you when we talked on the phone that we're going to be doing a film documentary on the struggle for civil rights in Kentucky from 1930, probably 1975, I think.
Oh.
It was stopped with the busing.
Okay.
And we're looking both for people who can talk to us about specifics, but we're also looking for photos and whatnot that we can use as part of the documentary. And there are not that many photos. At least the Louisville Courier took a number.
Right.
But many of the other newspapers in the state, even though they knew things were happening, elected not to cover it.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
So.
No, the Courier Journal is the major source, and I think we talked before, and of course, whatever they have out of U of L in the archives. The Defender, they took a lot of pictures, but accessibility, I can't comment on. It's
well, to sum this up, how do you see the contributions of your father-in-law?
Betsy, the more I learn about them and study about them and try to prepare to present them, the more impressed I become. This whole situation with, for instance, the suit against UK, most people think that, okay, he got some lawyers, he filed suit, and the judge said okay. But there was so much that went on before it. And even getting from the decision to sue to the suit, there was raising money, they're getting the lawyers, organizing the whole thing. before a lawyer will go sue, he has to be pretty well convinced that he's got a good case, mm-hmm. and the case had to be made. So literally, Dr. Johnson had to be denied entrance to make the suit, they have a legal term for it, to make it go. And all that had to happen beforehand. And in preparing again for the audition at Kentucky Humanities, I literally went through every clipping he had, and it's got to be that many, about related to the suit that was recorded in the paper, and then there's some personal letters as well. And,
well, if I recall correctly, he actually looked for someone else to be a plaintiff for a long time.
Right. The NAACP did, yeah. And they had the qualifications. Someone had to be this, and they had to be that, and they had to have all those qualifications. Plus the personal qualifications, they had to be willing to take it. Mm-hmm. And it's like all the fingers kind of, you round up pointing at him. And he said, okay. Because he admits in numerous statements that he didn't need a doctorate. He was teaching, he had been teaching, and there were no great opportunities for advancement, but he wanted to, he didn't see why he should be denied the opportunity just because he was Negro. So.
I've also heard attributed to him, tell me if you've heard this, that even though he was willing to make himself a plaintiff in the lawsuit, that he already had a degree from the University of Michigan, a master's degree, I believe.
Right.
And that he reportedly said at one point, you know, I want the right to be at UK, but if I were actually choosing a graduate program, I'd do much better to go back to the University of Michigan because it's a better school than the University of Kentucky was.
His words. Matter of fact, he called UK a dump. Mm-hmm. He said, I wouldn't want to go to this. He had his master's degree plus probably two-thirds of the requirements for his doctorate. Because he had gone to the University of Wisconsin as well.
That's right.
So he was later asked by someone at UK many, many, many years later why he called UK a dump. And he said, at the time it didn't compare academically to where he had been trained, but he modified it and said, it's better than I thought it was, UK. So, the diplomat.
Wade Hall's biography of Lyman Johnson, what did he think about that?
What did Dr. Johnson think of it? I'd say he loved it.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah. He was pleased with it. Wade Hall spent many, many hours with him to get the information, and he's such a masterful writer anyway. Mm-hmm. Have you met him? Do you know him? And a neat guy. I mean, it's just, so they matched quite well, and I think everybody was pleased.
Okay. Is anyone else, to your knowledge, writing about him now in terms of a major work to be published? Or?
No. You know, they did a documentary, and then someone else did another documentary, so there are a couple of those around.
I've seen.
But in terms of writing, nothing that I'm aware of.
From your work in his files, do you think there are special areas maybe that haven't been portrayed in the documentary or the biography that would provide new insights, new information?
Oh yes. Yeah. I told you he was so meticulous in his records keeping that literally everything that happened of note, he has a record of. I mean, correspondence by names of people, places visited, the NAACP records. Of course, he was the business manager at Central for 25 years. I guess they would call it athletic manager. Business manager of athletics. There's lots there.
So he kept all those papers?
Well, not all the documentation, but references to teams played and schedules and not intricate financial details.
In the photo biography that you're working on of him, are you going to present any of the new information?
Only as it relates to a photograph. Yeah, this is strictly... I had thought earlier of another approach, but I think this will be a first step. Yeah, something else could come in.
And do you have a publisher?
Well,
are
my son's
that far along?
Yeah, my son's a literary agent in New York. So there is my publisher.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to what we've talked about at this point?
Nothing really for the record. No.
I do remember what I wanted to ask.
Oh.
Did he keep a journal of any kind, sort of a daily accounting of...
I have not uncovered anything like that.
Or a diary? Or
no.
So it's his correspondence and minutes and memorandum and things of that
exactly.
Sort.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. Brochures, leaflets, pamphlets, papers.
Brochures and pamphlets from...
Awards, ceremonies. He spoke, thousands of places. He was invited to come and talk and on the program. At least one roast. I was there for that.
Tell me about that. A roast is...
Oh, my. This had to be in the early 80s. And by then he had just amassed such a reputation. I think his wife was dead. So it had to be maybe 80. And just everybody from everywhere came and did the roast thing. I think the mayor might have been Sloan, but it might not have been yet Sloan. And judges and students and teachers and politicians.
in many rows, as you probably know, frequently people sort of say things and take little sly digs at the person being roasted in a friendly kind of way. Was that the tone at all of this one, or was it more a compliment to his?
It was more complimentary, yeah. Everybody was just telling stories about Wyman,
right,
and remembering this. And,
right.
You know, so it was great.
Do you have any sense at all, when he was teaching American history, what his favorite areas of history were to teach?
Favorite areas? No, no sense of favorite areas, because he, as a matter of fact, in Wade Hall's book, he talks about, there's a chapter entitled, like, The Iconoclast in the Classroom. And his emphasis was always on the real, the true history, the real stuff. And he would name names and cite the places where his research showed different situation than popular history texts do. And he would tell the children, he said, look, here's the way it was. You know, this is what the book says. You find out, you do research, and you come to your own opinion about who is right about it. And of course, when he ever talked about slavery, that was a big topic to debunk the myths and the stereotypes and the lies.
I have begun recently to think, to pose a theory, I suppose, that I'm going to try out on you. I'm not sure that I'm right or wrong. I'm just sort of looking for people's reaction to it. But my sense is that in Kentucky, and when the schools were integrated, or when the schools were still separate, that the black schools taught more black history than when the schools first became integrated, that there was not that much black history in the curriculum, and it took a while, and it's still not great, but, you know, for there to develop more African-American history in the formal curriculum, and that we may have had a gap there of 10, 15 years where what we did know about African-American history wasn't taught much at all. Do you have any reaction to that? As I said, I'm not sure I'm right.
I think you're 100% right. African-American history was not even, there was not even a subject category in the white schools. Slavery was rarely mentioned, as though it never existed. But yes, in the black schools, because you had primarily black instructors and totally black student bodies, the tradition was that, yes, we teach black history. We teach history. Now, this is where we were in it. Yeah, no, we didn't come here voluntarily. Yes, we were brought here as slaves. And even after, quote, slavery ended, slavery still existed. Discrimination existed. Lack of opportunity. And that continued 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. 1954, they finally say, okay, you go to school again.
And that was the end of black history for a while.
For a while, because the school, everything got diluted. Except, as was the case here, the teachers didn't go. None of the black teachers went to white schools. None. Very few. But they took the black students because the law said you had to. But there was a serious fight trying to get black teachers into other schools.
Well, the black teachers who stayed in their schools were, to what degree were their classrooms comprised of white students?
Whatever the numbers had to be. It was mandatory percentages.
Right. Do you think that those black teachers, though, who had been teaching black history as we knew it at that point, would have continued to teach, or?
I'm sure they did.
Okay.
I'm sure they did. And many of them were looking for opportunity to spread the word, so to speak, because they knew that the white student population was ignorant of that, of black history, other than that maybe there was, somebody knew there was a Black History Month once a year or something.
With the rise of black power and nationalism in the 60s, and we began to see festivals and programs and clothing and names and all from Africa. And I have wondered whether some of that might have come in part because there had been sort of a gap there in which for young African American people, children and young adults, they had missed the opportunity to have any black history.
Totally right, totally.
Okay.
It was an awakening. It was an awakening, beginning in the late 50s. Basically, I go back to after the war. Really, after the war, when the black GIs came back, and the question often came up, here I am, risked my life for this country, and come back for this kind of treatment? No. No. Doesn't work. And that's when people like Adam Clayton Powell and A. Philip Randolph, and they were doing things during the war, but after the war, they were a focus of attention, and then more young people started to get into that, quote, movement, and the academics came along, and it was just, again, the awakening. But yeah, I didn't go to a segregated school when I was young. I always went to, the school was,
well, is there anything else you'd like to add to this interview?
Well, I'd like to thank you for being the person in the Oral History Project that is doing this work. I'm a great fan. As a matter of fact, I describe myself as a history promoter. Let me remember to give you a flyer about an event that's coming up this month. I'll be talking about the life and times of Thomas F. Blue, Sr. Mm-hmm. He was the first librarian at the Western Branch Library, which is one of the first libraries in the nation for then colored audiences. So I'll be doing a program on him. But I'm a history promoter, and oral history is such an important part of history. And we're racing against the tide because there are just fewer people who want to do it. And the number of people who are available to give it, literally leaving every day. One of the, I do a course on, I want to see my family tree. And one of the first things I tell people to do when you go out of this class, go to the oldest living member of your family. right away. Don't wait till tomorrow. If you can do it today, go today and just begin to record and write down anything they say. Get the basic details and anything else they say, because that's a resource and they're the ones at risk.
Right. How did you become interested in history? Do you remember?
All I can say, I think I've always loved history. And I've thought about how my interest grew. But even when I was a kid, and still today, I love maps. Mm-hmm. I can literally read a map for hours, just reading it. And then I think wanting to know what made such and such appear on that map is a natural outgrowth. So I can just say I just came by it. By nature, being inquisitive and always loving to read and so forth.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.